This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan, and today we travel to Lebanon to meet an amazing animal rights activist who is harnessing the power of social media to spread the vegan message across the Arab world. Her name is Maya Kawas. She is a Muay Thai fighter and a journalist with over 300,000 followers on Instagram. We discussed her most recent viral video and the crazy reactions it got from across the Middle East, the gender dynamics in Arab cultures, the beginning of her vegan journey when her friend was sacrificed for a religious holiday, and much more. Link in the description to connect with Maya. This is also the last episode of 2025. We end this year on a good note with an inspiring voice. Wow, what a year this has been. What an adventure. Thank you so much for tuning in every week, for leaving 5-star reviews, for sharing the show around, and just showing your support consistently. I wish you happy holidays. Take care of yourself. And I will see you in January with more thought-provoking, insightful, and caring conversations. Okay, marhaban, Maya. Thank you so much for being here.
Marhaba, Ryan. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast. It's a pleasure.
كيف حالك؟
أنا منيحة، أنت كيفك؟
I'm good. So, Maya, I wanted to start the conversation with kind of a provocative question. I welcomed not too long ago Zahra Abbas on the show, and she's the founder of Green Islam. She tries to make the Islamic argument for veganism. And when I posted our video, the episode we recorded together on Reddit, I got some surprising reactions of people saying that since she was a woman, she could not, you know, advocate effectively in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, or in the Middle East. What do you make of that reaction?
Well, Lebanon is a country in the Middle East, and I was born and raised in Lebanon. Is Sara Abbas from Lebanon?
No, I think she's from Pakistan, but she is Canadian.
Uh-huh. Sadly, there are still countries in the Middle East that are misogynistic. And women rights are not very common, unfortunately. Well, as a Lebanese person in Lebanon, we have women rights in an Arab country such as Lebanon. And women are actually really powerful in Lebanon, and they are very brave. They speak up. They are in politics. They are involved on television, on programs, and they are even, you can say, even stronger than the men here in Lebanon. Women are very respected in Lebanon. As a Lebanese person, I'm speaking for Lebanon. It's very sad that there are still countries where misogyny prevails. And I think this is like a problem in the culture. You know, some cultures did not evolve, and some cultures evolve, but it's not something like necessary in the Arab world. Lebanon evolved and the women are very free here.
Yes, I do agree that we should not generalize and that the, you know, the Arab world is very complex and there are different realities, different countries with different cultures. So yes, it is important not to generalize. What about your activism? So you are an outspoken vegan activist in Lebanon. Did you receive any pushback or, you know, bad faith opposition because of your gender?
Never. No. In Lebanon, if you're a woman, you're more likely to be chosen to for job opportunities. And women in Lebanon are mostly on TV and on social media. Women here are respected and they have a voice. Of course, there's misogyny everywhere. And of course, there are a minority of misogynists who are trying to oppress women and to hide their voices, but they are not prevailing. No, they're not winning. The women here in Lebanon are winning. And as a woman myself, I never suffered from misogyny. No, never. Here, I have my own car. I go wherever I want. I come back whenever I want. I do whatever I want. My parents respect my decisions and they give me the freedom, as every parent should. Mm-hmm. And personally, I never experienced any kind of oppression or losing opportunities because of my gender, especially in a country like Lebanon. I'm actually happy that I was in a Middle Eastern country like Lebanon, born and raised, because not everyone is that lucky in the Middle East.
Now, tell me what's happening exactly in terms of veganism and the vegan movement in Lebanon, because I feel like there's so much vegan momentum there. Of course, there's, you know, Lebanese vegans, the group. There's George Hayek and his hospital, which is the first vegan hospital in the world. And there's you and so many other influencers. I think that the Middle East Vegan Society is based in Lebanon. And so what's happening and why is there this explosion of veganism in Lebanon?
Well, first of all, George Hayek is an amazing friend. And he is the owner of Lebanese Vegans and the first vegan hospital in the world, Hospital Hayek. And also Middle East Vegan Society is founded by Seb Alex, which not a lot of people know. He is Lebanese Armenian. The nice thing about Lebanon is that you can say 90% of our food in Lebanon is accidentally vegan. Like everyone here eats vegan without realizing that this is vegan food. Like the hummus, the tabbouleh, the fattoush, the potatoes, the mhammara, kibbeh ya'tien, pumpkin kibbeh, ورق عنب بزيت, كوسة بزيت. Like, we have a lot of vegan dishes, which are like a necessity on every Lebanese table. And maybe this is why the vegan movement in Lebanon is progressing, because we're actually used to eating vegan food. And meat is considered a luxurious food, you can say. And this is how people started eating meat. So it was maybe the food of the kings and the queens and like the rich people, the really rich people who can afford it. And Lebanon is known for their agriculture, for planting and the vegetables, the fruits. The climate in Lebanon is very good for planting. And this is why most of Lebanese people are farmers, and they concentrate on planting their foods, their vegetables, their fruits. And veganism is something like very common here, because you're actually 90% vegan without even knowing you're vegan.
Yes, I can relate to that. You know, I told you before we started the recording that I was born in North Africa, and most North African food is vegan, plant-based. But, you know, because of French culture and the influence of French culture, we added, you know, butter and eggs to recipes that traditionally were plant-based. So I guess you were protected against that kind of influence from other Middle Eastern countries and also against the French, because there was French, you know, presence in Lebanon.
That's true. The French occupied Lebanon, and our Independence Day wasn't very long ago. It's in November 22.
Happy Independence Day.
Thank you.
Amazing. Okay, so then what is the opposition against veganism? What are, you know, the top things that Lebanese people, Middle Eastern people say in opposition to becoming full, you know, full-time vegan?
So usually the problems in Middle Eastern countries, when you tell them that you have to be vegan and it's the only way, like I cannot promote a lifestyle other than veganism because I cannot understand someone who knows, who is aware of what's happening to animals and still contributes in their suffering. So I cannot say that I understand people who are aware. Although the people who are not aware, we cannot blame them because I think we were once like them. I wasn't born vegan. I wasn't born knowing what was happening to the animals. But I think when you start knowing what's happening, you are responsible for everything, for every choice you take. So the oppositions in Lebanon, when we speak about veganism, is usually tradition and religion. They try to defend their choices by using tradition and religion as a shield to mask their murder, injustices, their exploitation. And I think that this is such a weak argument because using those two things as a shield is very cowardice. And this doesn't justify killing and torturing and exploiting innocent beings. And usually what I reply is I do not go into religion and like dive into it because you divert the idea into something else. So you're not talking about veganism anymore. Now you're talking into religion and now we're going into religion and that's not what we want. We have to focus on why it's ethical or not. And there's nothing ethical about slaughtering animals, not even the halal way, which some vegans say it's okay. But like some vegans say, not all animals are being slaughtered the halal way. They're not being treated in a good way. And they're not being slaughtered in the way that religion stated they should be slaughtered. But I think there is no ethical way to slaughter an animal that doesn't want to die. And this is why I do not dive into religion, because I do not believe in halal. I do not believe in ethical slaughter. I do not believe in humane slaughter. I do not believe in kosher. I do not believe in free range. I believe in bodily autonomy, in rights, freedom, and using religion and tradition to justify shedding blood, chopping heads, decapitating innocent beings, exploiting them, impregnating them, stealing their babies, it's very cowardice.
Yes, I agree. You know, we are recording this on the holiday weekend. Recently, there was Thanksgiving. And of course, you know, in North America, it is celebrated by, you know, the slaughter of a turkey. Everyone is eating turkey. And you can draw the same parallel with some Middle Eastern traditions. I know, you know,
Definitely.
Yeah, if someone is born, you know, we're going to slaughter a sheep or a lamb or something. There's also Eid al-Adha celebrated by Muslims, where it is, you know, very violent. Families will slaughter themselves, you know, a sheep. So do you think, you know, when people are...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Opposed to that level of animal violence, they develop a certain insensitivity. Like, I wonder, you know, if you show footage of animals getting slaughtered to Middle Eastern people, do they respond the same as, you know, North Americans?
I think that in my experience here, because I've done a lot of street activism in the Lebanese streets, and I also contributed with Anonymous for the Voiceless in Lebanon many times, where we hold a screen of videos of animals being slaughtered, showing the truth, nothing else but the truth, what you're paying for, what people are paying for, what their daily choices are doing. Usually, like 95% of people cannot watch, cannot see. So here, like, there's something unusual. How can you pay for this? How can you eat it? But you cannot watch it. Why do your eyes, they don't want to see this? But why does your stomach feel it's okay to handle it? There is a lot of ignorance. People do not see what's happening. They just go to the supermarket. They see the final product when the animal is already slaughtered. The animal is chopped, cleaned. You cannot see the victim's face, eyes. You cannot recognize the victim. It doesn't even look like a victim anymore. We turned animals into products, not living sentient beings that have faces, beating hearts. So a lot of people are shocked. And sometimes when we show them those footages of slaughter, they act like we're the ones that are harming them by showing them those footages. They act defensive. Some of them do not even want to watch it, but they contribute. They buy it. They eat it. They digest it. They fund it. And this is what hypocrisy means. And also, how it shows how people, there is a lot of cognitive dissonance. A lot of people claim to be animal lovers, and then their actions show the opposite. Yeah, I think that's it.
During Thanksgiving, there were so many, you know, meetups of North American vegans, and I think they were seeking support and warmth from fellow vegans, you know, just to resist or tolerate what's happening with the Thanksgiving tradition. Is there an equivalent to that in Lebanon in the vegan community? So for instance, when there is Eid al-Adha and people are, you know, slaughtering sheep left and right, do you get together and, you know, do something special? Or
I think that depends on a person, the person's beliefs. Like, if the person is a really strong believer of this, of a certain religion, I think that it's okay to practice it in an ethical way with their families if they're used to practicing this religion. And I think that religion should not be based on bloodshed and death, murder, and that people can evolve, can do better.
Okay, let me ask you about your, you know, I looked through some of your posts, and of course, I also follow the Lebanese Vegans account on social media, and there's lots of Arabic content, so in Arabic, that is accessible to other Arabic speakers across the Middle East. And so, of course, there's an evolved vegan scene in Lebanon, but not so much in the rest of the Middle East. But your content can reach people from all across the Middle East because it's in Arabic. Have you seen that? Did you know people message you or react from other countries of the Middle East to your content in Arabic?
Yeah, definitely. I recently went to a vegan sanctuary in Lebanon where there was a rescued calf, a baby cow that was rescued from slaughter from the dairy industry. And I went to this baby calf and recorded myself with this baby calf saying in Arabic that this is a living, breathing organism that feels pain. What's the difference between this calf and a dog? Why are you murdering this innocent creature? Why won't you be merciful and not slaughter this creature? This is a beautiful creature that deserves life and it wants to live, just like your dog. And this video went viral. It's actually like 2 months ago. It went viral in the whole Middle East. And I was very happy that it went viral. But the comments were pathetic. The comments were fueled with toxic masculinity and ignorance. And because I'm already an influencer on social media and I've been like using social media for a long time, I do not get affected from negative comments and bullying or like, you know, harsh words and insults. But I realized that most of the comments, they were from different countries all around the Middle East, but most of the comments were the ad hominem comments, which means ad hominem, مغالطة الشخصنة, I think it's called in Arabic, where instead of tackling the certain subject or idea, they attack you on a personal level. They curse you. They talk about your looks, your hair, your face, and they insult you on a personal level without even tackling the subject that you're talking about. And most of the comments that like used this ad hominem effect were males, toxic males in the Middle East. And the other half, they were sarcastic comments where they say like, oh, I'm hungry, now I want steak, which is so pathetic and weak. And I was actually happy that it reached this much people, even though that most of the comments were like males getting angry. Either they're attacking me, insulting me, or just being sarcastic. But I was happy because I made them watch a vegan content that they don't normally see every day. They don't open Instagram and see vegan videos. They don't open Instagram and see animals playing around. They see their shawarmas, their burgers, their slaughtered products. I made them see something that they don't usually see. I forced them to see this content and they're going to think about it. And I know that their conscience is eating them. Like, I know that the guilt is eating them. And if they were intelligent people that are like intelligent and compassionate people, they would see what they're doing is wrong and actually like learn from this video. So yes, it went viral in the Middle East, and a lot of pages in Lebanon, like you can say sarcastic pages, even reposted my video. They think like, what is she doing? She's so weird. This girl is so weird. Why is she saying that? Why is she defending an animal? Why is she not slaughtering it? Why is she not cutting off his head? You know? So a lot of pages reposted my video. And I was happy because, yeah, you're sharing my video. Thank you. You're sharing it. This is what I want. I want you to share it. Even though you're going to insult me, you're going to make fun of it, you're going to do whatever you want, you're sharing it. You're spreading veganism. You're spreading my words.
Yeah, it's like that phrase, I think it's from Gandhi, but I'm not sure. I think it's a fake quote. You know, they will laugh at you and then hate you and then, you know, goes down the list. But yeah, the overall idea is you need, it's better to get a reaction than to get indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Then I want to pick up on one of your comments. You said, you know, toxic masculinity. Do you think there is a correlation, you know, with the way Middle Eastern Arab men live their masculinity and animal abuse or animal exploitation?
Definitely, there is a big correlation. Unfortunately, men, I'm not going to only say Arab men, it's men usually, but it's also very, very common in Arab men. There is a lot of toxic masculinity because they were raised in a way to think that they're superior. They're the superior species, even more superior than females. They are like a god. They think they're a god. And they think that everything else is beneath them. Female humans, animals, whatever. Everything is beneath them. And this is actually a very sick characteristic in males. They're sick when they think like that. And I see a lot of men hunting animals. They think that this will make them feel more manly, look more manly. But this is actually a crying boy screaming. They think they're masculine, but they're not masculine. They are pathetic and insecure. A strong person, if they think they're strong, should protect a weak individual, animal, or anything. You should protect the weak, not harass it, catcall it, rape it, attack it, assault it, kill it. This is not what men should do or any human being should do, whether men or female. But usually, yeah, men have this toxic supremacist mentality where they just want to kill. There's violence. I think because in a young age, men were raised in society and by their parents to appear insensitive, not talk about their feelings, appear like they don't care, they don't cry, they don't express themselves. And the things that are offered to males are usually violence, guns, even if it's toy guns like water guns, video games that involve killing. It's always roughness. They're raised in a rough manner. Be rough, be violent. You're a man. Be a man. Don't cry. Don't have mercy. Your word is the only word. A female is not allowed to speak. You're before her. You speak. She follows you. You lead. And you kill. You're a man. Go hunting. Go kill this rabbit. This innocent poor rabbit. Go kill it. Be a man on this rabbit. Show this rabbit you're a man. Show this deer you're a man. This is how they think that they will become men. But they're actually pure, insecure, pathetic people that need therapy and rehab. They need rehab.
I would add to that, you know, it is codified in religion and tradition. Usually, you know, if the sheep needs to get to be slaughtered, it's the man of the family that has to do the slaughtering. It is always incumbent on, you know, the man of the family, the patriarch, to do the killing.
Yeah. I think there is a big role in religion and tradition. And a lot of people want to explain religion in their own way. And it's not like that. Like, we are seeing what religion and tradition is causing, what it's doing. And it's obvious that this all came from religion and tradition. And now some people are going to say...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
No, you're doing religion wrong. This isn't how religion works. This isn't how tradition works. Okay, look at the majority, what's happening. And it's already written in the books. Men, supremacy, dominion. It's obvious. Personally, I do not like argue in religion because a lot of people will become so defensive. And I do not believe in religion. I believe in ethics, morality, respect, education, knowledge, mercy, science, actually. And it's sad that how cultures were brought up, how men are being fed this toxic traits. It's very concerning because we can see what it's causing. The wars, the weapons, the rapes, the murder, either if it's on the humans and the animals and the planet. And you know something, that some females are misogynistic and they have like some, this toxicity, like some females, they got it. Like imagine a female who is misogynistic. It's sad that she's misogynistic and she hates her own kind. I usually see those females, the ones that drink dairy, that consume dairy, they're the most misogynistic, the most anti-females. She can say she's a feminist. She can go on the streets and protest for feminism and women's rights. And then the minute she goes back home, consumes dairy and eggs, she is anti-female. And that's something not all females realize and not all females want to accept.
Yeah, let me share a personal, you know, experience with that. I was talking to a cousin, she's a woman, and I was telling her about, we were talking about grandma and how I loved grandma and all of that. She said, you know, she prefers the boys in the family than the girls. I was like, what were you saying? And she gave me a list of examples. And I, you know, I had to concede that, yes, her behavior was quite different with the boys compared to the girls in the family. And that's the same attitude you described. You know, she looked at the boys as, you know, those amazing, you know, creatures that can do no wrong. And so, yeah, that resonates with me on a personal level.
That's very true. That's very true. I've seen this. I've seen this a lot, a lot in a human, in the human race, a lot.
Let's talk about violence too. You know, sadly, if I ask someone in the streets, you know, what do you know about Lebanon? I think they will think about, you know, the news coverage of Lebanon, and they will think, you know, oh, there's violence, there's war, this is a, you know, crazy place. Now, I don't know how much of that is true, because the news coverage is, you know, always biased. Mm-hmm. But do you think that in countries with a history of violence, of war, of conflict, there's a propensity to abuse animals in people?
Okay, so in Lebanon, I think it's pretty obvious. The whole world knows that we were in a war like 2 years ago, and we're still actually being bombed by Israel practically every day. And we are war survivors who were not killed, fortunately. Lebanon is a very beautiful country that a lot of people misunderstand, and they have the wrong idea because of the Western media and what the Western media shows, especially like most of the Western media is Zionist, and they wanna like make Lebanon look like this destruction place, war zone. Like, it's not like that. The Lebanese people are very, very resilient, and like, we continued our lives and we continued living. And like, me, I'm against all kinds of violence, all kinds of violence. I'm not with weapons, not with wars. I just like wish that there was peace on earth between everyone. You know, this is what I want. This is what I wish. So, in countries like, for example, Lebanon, we've been through war. I don't think that because of this war, people are going to start abusing animals, because Lebanon, the Lebanese are already known for being educated people, that, and the majority of the Lebanese population is educated and aware of animal rights. But sadly, this goes only to pets like dogs and cats. The Lebanese people are very, very well known for protecting stray animals and feeding them. And like, when you go down on the streets, you see everyone feeding the cats, everyone feeding the dogs, which is a very good thing. I'm so happy and thankful for those people. But you cannot be an animal lover if you feed cats and dogs and go back home and slaughter other animals. Like, what did you do? Like, it's like you did nothing. And I think something that is common here is that when, during the war, when I was posting about slaughterhouses and veganism, like, I did not stop one day posting about veganism. People were like, oh, this is what you care about now? There's a war going on, and you're caring about the animals instead of posting about the humans dying. Let's get one thing straight. I can post about whatever I want, you know? So I tell them that you can go ahead and post on your social media about humans. You can do a human organization even. I'll encourage you. But like, I want to talk for the animals, because they have no one, they have no voice. It's my account. I want to defend whoever I want. If you don't like that, go to your government and tell them, protect me. They are the ones who are responsible for you, not me, a Lebanese citizen. But I'm trying to raise awareness about the voiceless that do not have anyone to defend them. And people go insane, like, oh, so this is what you care about. I don't know, like, some, they justify a crime with another crime. Like, okay, we tell them a lot of animals are being killed. Okay, yeah, humans are being killed too. So, does that justify animals being killed? You cannot justify a crime with another crime. They're both equally wrong. They're both equally wrong. There's nothing, like, more right than another thing. Like, justice is justice, whether it's for animals or humans. But animals do not have a voice, and the majority of the world isn't vegan. The majority of the world is killing them. So it's at least it should have someone to defend them and talk for them, because nobody is eating humans in the world. Nobody is like, there is human abuse. There is slavery up till now. But like, it's not as this common as slaughtering animals, exploiting them, using them for entertainment, testing on them. The animal genocide is the biggest genocide in the world. And it's the most genocide that no one talks about.
And, you know, we're only a few people talking about animals and what they're going through. You know, human abuse, it will get covered by news outlets from everywhere. But if we fail to give voice to the animals, then, you know, who else? Who else is going to take on that task? And so, yeah, we need to prioritize the animals, at least us, you know. It doesn't mean, you know, you don't care about human issues. You know you care. I also care a lot. And, you know, sometimes I want to take my, you know, mic and record an episode on whatever human issue. I think it's important, but that's what it means to prioritize an issue over another.
They have a lot of people doing that. A lot of people fighting for human rights. Almost everyone is fighting for human rights. How many animals are getting slaughtered purposely by second? 1 billion every second. Now they're 2 billion. They're 3 billion. 4 billion. They keep increasing. Billions are being slaughtered every second. Humans aren't being slaughtered. And they're not being slaughtered in this rate. And they're not being killed in this rate. Wars are bad. We're against wars. But the war on animals is the biggest war in the world. And it's our priority. And it's the war we should all talk about. The war on animals.
I agree. I want to quickly go back to the question of violence and animal abuse. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a class in college, a psychology class, and the teacher was explaining why, you know, when someone has a bad day at work, you know, they go back to their house, their family, and the first one that, you know, gets hit by that, you know, is the dog. Or explained, you know, another way, the person is stressed because of their job and they find a way to vent the stress by, you know, hitting the dog of the family. And so it's always the animal, the defenseless one, that finds itself the outlet for that stress. And, you know, I meant, you know, in countries that know violence and war, people get psychologically, you know, traumatized, and often that hurts animals, because then people use animals as an outlet for that stress. Have you witnessed any form of that?
I did not witness like a form of this abuse that is directly linked to the war. I've witnessed abuse in Lebanon before the war. And after the war, there's always abuse, but it's not linked to the war. I think that a person who has a bad day or gets traumatized and then goes abusing people, I think that's a psychopath. And I don't think that it should be a reason to justify animal abuse. I don't think this is how trauma begins. I think like usually trauma is like the violent trauma is built when the person is young and they're brainwashed. When they're young, this is like their brains are still very sensitive. It's easy to mold and mend. And yeah, this is how you can create an animal abuser when they're children, mostly. I'm not saying it's the only way to become an animal abuser, but most of the animal abusers, it shows when they're children. It shows that this person, like the way he's raised or she's raised, the way, like, the education level, the awareness, when they see their parents doing this, their dads, their moms, abusing animals, and, of course, the food that they eat, if it's animal-based food, of course, they're going to become animal abusers or more prone to abusing animals unless they figure out what they're doing and just put a stop to it and put a stop to the cycle of abuse. And I think that there's always abuse because people are not being raised correctly. There's a lot of ignorance. And because there's speciesism towards animals, some animals are being treated better than animals. And human superiority.
I want to ask you, and of course, we know that serial killers, you know, the first victims of serial killers are always animals, you know, and during their childhood, nonetheless. So, yeah. I want to ask you about your relation with the...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Rest of, you know, the vegan world. Are you in contact with other, you know, vegan activists from outside of Lebanon? Do you feel like what's happening in terms of activism in Lebanon is kind of in its own bubble and not really in relation with the rest of the movement worldwide?
Actually, yes, I am in contact with a lot of vegan activists outside of Lebanon, and I have a lot of friends from abroad, from the UK, Australia, the Netherlands, and USA. I have a lot of friends from abroad that are vegan activists, and one of them, like most prominent vegan activists worldwide that are very famous. And we always speak and share information together because we are one entity fighting for the same reason. This is what we share, no matter what backgrounds we come from. No matter what language we speak one common language, which is veganism. It brings us together. And I think in Lebanon, it's amazing because we also have vegan activists, but I think that it still needs training, you can say. There aren't a lot of vegan activists in Lebanon. There are some, and they should be more. And in other countries, the vegan activists are more courageous. I see videos, for example, of Tash Peterson. I respect her so much. She goes to like horse races, restaurants, supermarkets, and protests as loud as she can. And I think she's amazing for doing that. I see Gary Yourofsky, one of the biggest vegan activists in the world, who turned million people into vegans throughout his speech that he gave like 11 years ago, I guess. It's on YouTube. It's called The Best Speech You Will Ever Hear or something by Gary Yourofsky. So there's a lot of other vegan activists, like a lot. I cannot name them all, but there are a lot. And we are in contact. I'm so happy that we are in contact, all of us, and we share a lot of ideas and advice because I want to learn from senior vegan activists, experienced vegan activists, how they started, what can I do in a country like Lebanon where veganism isn't very common and animal rights isn't very common, and it's not common to go to supermarkets and scream and tell them meat is murder. You cannot go to like a horse race and say horseback riding is slavery. Like, you cannot do that here. It's not common. No one ever did that. I would love to do that, actually, but I'm going to be the only one, and I'm going to face a lot of issues. Maybe I don't know what might happen, you know? Maybe it's not going to be very safe.
It's never safe if you're alone doing it, you know, against the crowd. Yeah, there's force in, there's strength in numbers. There's protection too in numbers. I'm so glad that you are in contact and talking. I had Gary on the show, actually. It was great talking with him. His perspective is very, you know, unique and I think precious. How did you become vegan? Now I'm interested in, you know, I never ask this question to my guests, but I'm really curious on, you know, how you encountered veganism and how you were introduced to it.
Oh, yeah, I love this question. So ever since I was young, I was raised in a household where my parents, they used to teach me how to treat animals with kindness, cats, dogs, even chickens and sheep. They got me chickens and sheep as pets, I remember, when I was young. And this isn't very common for children, like parents getting their children pets that are sheep and chicken and rabbits and hamsters even. I am against animal breeding and against selling animals. But like, when I was young, I did not know that because my parents got them already. So I was taught to treat them with kindness and respect and dignity. And I wanted to become a vet when I was 6 years old because I thought that vets are like the most ethical people towards animals on earth. But I was wrong because 90% of vets aren't vegan. They eat their patients. And this is pure hypocrisy again. Cognitive dissonance. Anyways, I wanted to become a vet. And I even wrote it in my journal when I was six. Vet Mayaka was. And I did like a business card. And I did it green. I remember I did it green because I love nature. And they drew some animals on it. And I called myself Dr. Mayaka was the vet. As I grew up, I'm going to tell you a story. My sheep, his name was Khudra. I called him Khudra because I used to feed him vegetables, which is Khudra in Arabic. And he was my best friend. And I was like 10 years old. We have a lot of pictures together because I have a house in the mountains with a big garden. And he used to live there. I wake up every day and feed him. And one day, it was Eid al-Adha, and the Khudra is like 5 years old, maybe. So he was taken and slaughtered, and I didn't know what happened to him. Like, imagine your dog being slaughtered. Khudra was practically my dog, who was a sheep. He was my friend. And when I saw what happened, I did not understand what is going on. And why did they slaughter my friend? And they offered me a dish and I couldn't even look at it. Eating my friend, this is psychopathic, crazy behavior. What is happening? This is child abuse. And I made the link when I was young. I made the link and I stopped eating meat for a long time and couldn't eat it anymore. And then when I continued university and school, again, you do not see how animals are being slaughtered. It's not something shown on television or like shown in your kitchen. So I continued eating animal products blindly, sadly, without knowing what I'm causing. And then suddenly, one day I was walking in the library about 5-6 years ago, and I saw a book in this library. It's a vegan book. It's called How Not to Die by Michael Greger. And I was intrigued, like, this is such an interesting title. Let me buy it. I do not know what it's talking about. I just bought it. And when I started reading it, the first page, it's telling you to go vegan. And I didn't know what's vegan. I never heard of this term. So after reading the first chapter, I immediately turned vegan in one night. So it started for health purposes. And then I started researching about why a person should go vegan. And my main reason now is ethics, because people who go vegan for health purposes might go back to eating and consuming animals, but it's the ethics that counts. And yeah, this is how I became vegan. I made the link and I remembered Khudra, and I have a dog, and animals have feelings and they feel pain and they do not want to die.
That's such a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing it, Maya. Yeah, I reminds me of my friend growing up. My parents brought me adopted a duck. We called him Berber, and he was my friend growing up. And actually, the neighbors poisoned him because they did not like the sounds that he was making. And I think that also played in my story, you know, in the reasons why I became vegan. So yeah, it's thank you for giving me the opportunity to remember Berber. Yeah, we need to remember them. And Michael Greger, I met him actually a few months ago. He's amazing, you know, very positive, very generous with his time. And it was at a conference and activists were just surrounding him. And, you know, I felt bad for him because he did not get a minute of rest. You know, there was always someone coming up and asking for a picture or questions or, yeah, beautiful soul. To end the conversation, Maya, I wanted to ask you about social media. Recently, you know, it's been doing the rounds. There's someone who shared his experience as a hired social media account for Big Ag. And so he was paid $17 an hour to manage different social media accounts that were all anti-vegan. And, you know, he would go and post in the comments of influencers like yourself and organizations, you know, disparaging people to go vegan or insulting them, doing just his level best to discourage people to become vegan. And, you know, it's kind of viral right now. It's shocking to now know that Big Ag is actually hiring people to be negative against veganism on social media. What do you make of that story?
I actually didn't hear of this, and now I'm very shocked. Okay, so I think it's very common for those petty animal abuser businesses to hire people to troll and comment on a vegan post to demote them, to show that they're not like credible or good, like animal consumption. I think it's very petty and pathetic. And I think it shows how much they know that they're losing so much money, they're losing so much people. A lot of people are diverting to a plant-based diet and are learning about animal rights and ethics and the environmental impact of a plant-based diet. And of course, the main reason to go vegan is ethics. And those people are very sad and empty. And it shows how much they know that they're losing. Yeah, they're trolls. And they're not going to win, because justice will win at the end. The people are waking up. The world is waking up. They're going to lose. They're going to fall. And we're going to be there to watch, hopefully, to see the downfall of the meat, the dairy, and the egg industry.
I love your optimism. Yeah, we should have the equivalent, but, you know, as vegans, I have people hired to talk, you know, to say positive things about veganism. Someone pay Maya to continue posting about veganism.
I do it for free.
Don't say that. They won't pay you then.
I do it because it's the right thing to do.
I know.
It's not a business. It's not something that I even care about making money from, you know. It's a justice matter. It's in Arabic we say wajibna al-akhlaq. Wajib. Hada wajibna. To do this. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yes, I feel the same way about this podcast. You know, I'm not making money out of it. Maya, thank you so much. I love your optimism. Did you want to add something before we stop the recording?
Thank you so much. I think that's it. I think I don't have anything else to say. It was very nice speaking to you, Rayan.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly.